Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Elaine Feeney's third novel is out. It's called Let Me Go Mad in My Own Way. Great title. Her previous one, How to Build a Boat, as you know, was nominated for a Booker Prize. And now she's looking at an Irish family home across three generations. There's violence, there's certainly horses and English fellas wandering into Galway with no idea what's in store for them. Elaine Feeney is here to tell us all about it. Congratulations on the novel.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Let me go mad in my own way. It almost sounds like an expression, an Irish thing we'd say, but no, it's from the classics,
it
I
is,
gather.
It is, actually, yeah, it's very old. It's from Electra, so we can blame Sophocles, and it's a translation by Anne Carson. But it really, yeah, it's a kind of, there's an Irish kind of shtick to it a little bit, I think.
The Greeks knew us
they
so
did.
Well.
Yeah, well, the Greeks knew tragedy and madness. And the great
Sophocles,
chorus.
He's the great tragedy writer. So like, you're straight into that one. Yeah, I'll find something here. And is it, let me know, let you know this or something? Is that the full phrase?
Yeah.
Let me go mad. Yeah. I can tell you this.
Yeah. Well, there's many, many different translations, but
of
absolutely.
Course,
yeah.
That's the one you stick to.
Yeah.
Tell us about the road that you grew up in, because I think that's the inspiration, isn't it? As it often is for you.
It is. It is. I've been sort of, you know, in the same space for quite some time now with these novels. I may never move out of them. But so I bought the bungalow that I grew up in my 20s and for better or worse, decided to stay there and see if I could write the West in a way. I don't know if I thought about it in that sort of lofty sense at that time. I think maybe I just was, you know, interested in moving back home. And there have been many generations, and I say many because I don't actually know how many, and I don't want to know, interestingly. So my grandparents had lived on that road, my parents, cousins, and so on. So yeah.
The farms. This is East Galway.
This is East Galway,
where there's turf cutting along the nice kind of...
tractors, hay.
Damp hedges, but nice and warm. Because it's different from the... completely different to West Galway, isn't it?
It's very different.
It's inland.
It's inland, yeah. So it's very green and it's very inland. And obviously... you know, I like the space. And I hadn't looked at Athenry before for a novel. You know, How to Build a Boat, I set it in a fictional town near the sea, as you were. I stuck it in a hospital. So for this novel, I really wanted to write what I knew and the stories of what I knew.
It's like a trilogy for you, these, aren't they?
Yeah.
Institutions, is it?
Yeah. So I'm obsessed with institutions and buildings and people and putting people into institutions and seeing what happens to them. So the first one was a hospital setting and it was strangers in a meet in As You Were. And then in How to Build a Boat, it's a boy in a Catholic school, quite an oppressive school. And I was interested in him in that space. But in Let Me Go Mad My Own Way, I really wanted to interrogate the idea of the kitchen and the idea of the kitchen space in a house as the most political. So I think I worked up to weirdly the most political space, except that we never think of it like that.
No, it's totally unexpected here, but it is the place. And you're fascinated by those farmhouses where you opened the front door, you were straight into the kitchen.
Correct.
And then we had the bungalow. I presume, is that what you grew up in, a bungalow?
Yeah, 1970s bungalow. And I am upset. So obviously the old house is there, and this is very present in the story. So the old houses are dotted across the West.
Yes.
And I'm fascinated by how many of them have never been knocked. Or, you
That's
know, moved.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I went on a mad trip to Clare with my husband recently. We were walking in the Burren and I met him stop at any of the abandoned ones. And I won't lie now, I did do a little bit of snooping inside. They were abandoned. It was okay. It was a lovely hot day. I just said, I'm lost. I'm looking for the loo. And
because they're kind of sheds now,
aren't they? Yeah, they are sheds.
But nobody tore them down.
No. No, and the Hessian sacks in some of them, and 10, 20 bags and others. And
wonders inside.
Yeah, and bungalows beside them. So you had these houses, and exactly what you said, they had the open kitchen, they had the loft where children slept, and then they built these bungalows in the early 70s. You know, Fintan O'Toole wrote about this in The Bungalow Nation in one of his books.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand that, but I'm fascinated by how we made the room smaller.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like we went into individualism before we knew what capitalism was.
You're dead right.
You know,
we were mad for the front room.
Correct.
The good room, the hallway.
Good room.
And then the kitchen's out the back all of a sudden. It's a total reversal.
So the first thing I did when I bought the bungalow, well, it wasn't the first thing, when I saved a bit, I knocked the walls and made the big kitchen space.
You were ahead of your time. You said you were in your 20s when you got your family home.
Yeah.
And you bought it.
I did. That's very important.
Very important. You mentioned that.
I think I have the mortgage till I'm 97.
No privilege here, I can tell you.
No, I didn't really understand the generational wealth thing. I think we're all learning about that now. Yeah.
Maybe that's West Galway. No, no, they'll be on to us as well. No, definitely not. Mayo.
No comment.
No comment, exactly. And that's the character in this story, Claire. She goes back to her home place as well, but obviously more complicated things have happened to her than have happened to you. Yeah. Tell us what goes on from the get-go.
Yeah, so Claire O'Connor is living her life in London, and her mother dies in the West in some sort of weird, unusual circumstances. It comes as a bolt from the blue. Mm-hmm. This happens very quickly, so I'm giving nothing away. This is the setup. And she returns for the funeral. And then she goes back to London, and she's living in London with Tom, her boyfriend, her partner of a decade. And she goes back to London to Tom, and she sets her life on fire. She doesn't realise it's grief and anger, and she hears her father is ill. She returns to the West to mind him and look after him. And then she's left alone in the bungalow. And she has, you know, she has, like I said, set her life on fire. So she's left Tom, who is a very unknowable individual, you know, London Tom.
A writer.
And he's
Where did you find the inspiration for this?
I don't know. And he's writing about extreme sports and ultra sports and men who take part in ultra sports. So that kind of fascinates me, you know. Tom's looking for energy in all the stories and there's, Anyway, she returns back and she's faced with this bungalow on her own. She has two brothers and the past unravels through just the objects, just her in the bungalow in that space, finding things from her parents. And she starts to have conversations with them that she never had in her life, if that makes sense. She didn't really face it.
Yeah.
And she's confused. You know, Claire is quite confused, a confused character. And I suppose in some ways she's representative of the upward mobility and the progressiveness and the moves, the leaps that Ireland have taken with regards to women and agency and autonomy. She has money. Mm-hmm. She's a lecturer. She has a job. And so she's in the house. And where does she walk herself? You have all this freedom, and where she walks herself onto the internet. Into a deep dive on the
great sequences where you sum up the rubbish that we're all watching. But she becomes fixated on the trad wives phenomenon on TikTok. Explain that to the uninitiated.
Well, the trad wives, well, I don't know, do I need to explain it? But I was getting, you know, these algorithms. So I was interested in, you know, I was looking at Claire and I was saying, what would a woman do locked in this bungalow? Because it was lockdown when she was in it. Mm. And I said, of course, she'd scroll the internet. And you're absolutely right. And I said in the last novel, the Vanta black hole of the internet that we all go into. And it's just fascinating. I will get to the trad wife, sorry. But it's just fascinating. No, but you're just scrolling and you're scrolling at such extreme violence and such horrific scenes. And then you come to this woman making a lemon tart in a pink apron, you know, and I don't know, it just fascinated me. And what fascinated, so the trad wife movement is particularly an American thing, but they believe in the conservative values of traditional womanhood, which I do not espouse. But
shock horror. But it's kind of 50s, isn't it? That
it's
50s
very
image of
the
America.
50s, and the picket fence idea.
Your man will look after you. You just look after him and everything will be grand.
Yeah, do you remember that domestic science book? Were you familiar with it? Where put a ribbon in your hair when your husband is coming in and have the dinner on the table?
I went to an all-boys school, so they didn't give us
that. Light one for 20 years.
Yeah. They didn't give us that. Up in the Louis Convent, maybe they did.
Well, the boys, when I was teaching them in the boys' school, I remember saying, you know, it's just such a shock how women's history isn't included on the history course and it's such a small minority. And they said, bless, maybe they teach it across in the girls' school.
Oh my God, the same thing I said.
Anyway, so that's the trad wife movement. So Claire gets involved. Yep. Now, she's looking for some sort of control of her own life. Mm-hmm. And I think, interestingly, you know, I'm very on the fence. I had a really big idea of what I thought of trad wives.
Oh, yeah.
And I won't use the language on the radio. But then when I went on my deep dive.
Oh, no.
No, but I just thought, again, it's about agency. Maybe they're monetizing it. Maybe it's control. Who am I to comment on
this? I see that view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And because they're playing an act. So maybe the joke is on the people who think it's a great idea. But the ones who are enacting it are actually getting something out of it for themselves.
I think that's really, apt, actually, because I think we have, you know, there can be an arrogance to looking at this and then you see 10 million followers and you can 10 million followers be wrong? I have seven. You know, like, but it is this idea, but what are they looking for? Control. And then there's an awful lot of taking things out of packages, putting them into cupboards, fixing things. And but Claire gets into
she
that.
Really
she tries to control her
labeling
life.
Labelling everything yeah. in the presses. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
She's an amazing cook because
yeah, she is.
Somehow, like, I think we need a dinner party to discuss the novel because there's so much eating that goes on.
Yeah, I needed to write the great West of Ireland dinner party. So obviously the story culminates, it goes across three timelines that we can talk about, but it kind of comes
from
to
Black and Tans to Trad Wives. There's yeah. so much fun in between here, but also
a lot of sadness.
A lot of sadness. It's deep, deep stuff.
Yeah. But the dinner party scene, I did think, like, I had watched Andrew Scott and Uncle Vanya, and I was like, well, if the Russians can prance around, we certainly can now with our upward mobility and our Prosecco and Cremant.
Did you travel to see that? That's where he plays every role.
No, they live streamed it to, nice. I think it was the Palace Cinema, because they did it with the Seagull as well. They used to live stream the National, but oh, he was fantastic in it.
Oh, amazing, I heard.
So absolutely outstanding. And yeah, I went back to check off, but actually there isn't a dinner party scene in Uncle Vanya, really. There's food and a lot of conversation. And here I was going, well, of course, I will set a table.
You will do a dinner.
In the bungalow.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's see what happens. And yeah.
But the clash of people who come,
oh.
because you've got English Tom, you've got the nice stoic man next door, the farmer.
Joe.
And because you work in academia yourself,
I
you're
do.
In Old School in Inagaliva,
yeah.
University of Galway.
Oh.
Do you know people who talk like the characters of that dinner party?
Absolutely not. I have an amazing imagination and everything I write is fictional. Nobody that I know is interesting enough to put in my novels.
Talking down to a farmer who's obviously keeping his intelligence to himself.
Correct.
About the patriarchy.
Correct.
And primogeniture. Is that how you say
yeah,
that word?
Yeah, the inheritance rights.
Fascinating. The first
born son. Yeah. Yeah. Another little.
Favourite word of the thing. Primogenitor.
Yeah,
very good.
Well
yeah, love
done.
It. Love it. Yeah, nearly did it.
But it is. But actually, I am interested in that. I'm interested in that in the West of Ireland. I had a conversation with a friend of mine. She's an amazing comedian and she's a farmer. And there's four daughters in the family. And we had this conversation and she cannot, like she's, her father doesn't even see that she could maybe perhaps inherit the family farm. And I said, is that to do with name? And this actually affects Claire also in the novel. She has the bungalow, but it's shared with the brothers.
Yeah.
And Joe next door has rented out the land.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I think it has to do with name. I think it has to do with the name. You know, I did write in something, give your husband's name or your father's name.
Yeah.
And I mean, that
we were talking
back
about surnames only
yeah.
yesterday. And
okay.
how it's the male inheritance thing. And yeah. there is that. We need to keep the line going.
Yeah.
Why? No one even asks. Just, no, that's the way it's been. That's the way
yeah.
it is.
And people do it. And it really shocks me. Like, but I, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so the name. So I suggested maybe they need to start calling farms names, you know, name the farm.
Yeah, yeah.
And allow, you know, the women farmers to have their space.
The Brits
space.
Do that, don't they?
I'm not here to discuss the Brits' inheritance.
Well, there's an amazing sequence in the book involving the horse. We go back to 1990
yeah.
and some men have arrived and the local Irish, Anglo-Irish gentry, I think, as well.
Correct.
To recruit a horse for the Queen's mm-hmm. horse guards. Mm-hmm. But it sets up the kind of the father's brute madness towards the women
yeah.
in the house. You grew up around horses.
Mm-hmm.
What was the significance of that moment in the novel?
I was fascinated when I grew up around horses. So it sounds very lofty and bourgeois to grow up around horses. But actually, you know, there was a tradition of having a horse.
Yeah.
I was very close to my grandparents, my paternal grandparents were rural Ireland. They lived beside us. My grandfather had a pony and a cart. It's like something from Heaney.
It's crazy.
I know. And we used to draw water. I'd go in the cart with them and talk to them all day. And so I loved horses from a very young age. And so there was always a horse on the farm and my grandfather couldn't drive. So I used to ask him things about the land and he'd tell me, don't mind asking those questions. And I said, where did you get these fields, you know? And he said, from Lamperts below there. And he just used to wave his hand. And this was the big house
right.
that backs onto the piece of land that my father has now inherited. And so the hunt with the Galway Blazers was a thing growing up. And I'm vehemently anti-blood sports now. But when you're a child, you have no agency around what you get involved in.
Yeah.
And so local farmers would also hunt alongside the Anglo-Irish, you know, it was a mixed, it was
they could dress how they
a
liked.
Motley crew.
That was interesting. Yeah, didn't notice that bit myself.
And so I experienced this from a young age and I had no idea about colony, class, what it meant, inheritance, the black and tans. No, I knew in school that we were very lucky that great men saved Ireland. from 800 years of oppression.
Yeah.
And Ireland was great. And I must be very thankful. And that's what I felt deeply, and a really deep sense of pride in that.
And the violence ended as well.
Oh, it all.
When we got rid of them.
Oh, we did. Yeah. Well, we walked ourselves into a few decades of incredible violence.
Yeah.
And so the horse really is just a kind of a symbol of that Ireland and how these people mixed and how assimilation happens and how it's not as clear cut as dividing. And as I started to get older and started to read McGaughran, actually Maeve Binchy, Zeko's and the town and on. Yeah. And I thought, oh, this is unusual. This is strange. They do, you know, they wore hairnets and stuff. And they seem to have a lot of power in this hunt situation. Mm-hmm. So there was a hierarchy, I felt. We were at the back, the farmers' children.
It's 1990. It's,
I know.
It's very surprising, but it feels totally true.
It was the kind of the end tale, I felt, of that. You know, there were people on that hunt with titles.
Yeah.
Lady.
Right.
Yeah.
Still now, holding on to them. From whom?
Yeah, but I was fascinated by it. But yeah, the father thinks, hopefully the father will sell a horse to the Queen of England. This big rumour goes around the town that the Queen of England is coming to Athenry to buy horses for the Queen, as if she's coming herself. And it's going to be the kind of their freedom. It's going to be their upward mobility. It may save the family. It may save the farm. And they take a special interest in his black mare. And that sequence of 1990 really helps us understand Claire's stagnant confusion in her life. She hasn't faced that event.
No.
And so we see it then from the third person, and then later on we will see it from a different
completely
perspective.
Completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really clever. I also was interested in how the townspeople essentially act the fool, don't they, to oppress these fellas.
The Chacron.
Coming in.
The Ambusagalt is like hop. Yeah, well, it's the kind of that idea of language. You know, when you're under oppression, words are your weapon, you know. And so that is, there's a legacy of that, I think. There's a legacy of language, of subversion, of kind of not saying what you want, the half-talk code of mystery and the wink and elbow language of delight, sort of.
Beautiful Kavanagh.
Yeah, but when I read Kavanagh, I was like, you're so right. But he was talking about, you know, townspeople. But I mean, we have to also include, you know, God, I'm giving you all the literary Yeats is sort of fumbling in the greasy till, and the petty bourgeois of the Irish Catholic middle
class. It's all in there.
Well.
I should also say, it is great crack, this.
Yeah,
novel.
Please. Thank you. Okay, I've turned everybody off.
Because poor old Tom. I mean, I particularly love the bit, he spots the mad picture of the Sacred Heart with the light underneath him. And he says, Jesus, it's like a bulb you'd find in a whorehouse. And I'm going,
that blasphemy.
This Sassenach has offended us. But poor man doesn't know what he's talking about, does he? He's just, this is all new to him.
He doesn't, but he's sort of enraptured with the Irish men that go on ultramarathons and sail across oceans. And he just wants to figure them out. But he really does not understand history. He doesn't have a clue, and he's in this part of the world. And of course, Claire's brothers meet him and they see him as the stranger. One of them doesn't. And that all permeates the atmosphere. And I was really just exploring what it would be like for the Englishman in a town, if that makes sense.
I know
it sounds, plenty of us are all married and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it was just that idea of coming in and the inheritance and going back to primogeniture and this idea that he comes in to the bungalow and the brother immediately is suspicious of him.
Yes.
And Tom is totally unknowing. He has no clue.
Yeah,
he's just cleaning up.
It kind of exposes our arrogance, a bit like the trad wives, where we have this view of the English ourselves. And then when you sort of start to realise, how would they know the dynamic of inside an Irish family home?
Yeah, but maybe they should know.
Well, that argument is...
sorry. This sounds very binary. Like, it's not, you know. It's complicated.
Back to the crack, because Claire is very jealous of this Joanna woman.
Oh, Joanna.
Who drives a Tesla. I noticed you put it
there. I had that in before.
Did you really?
All the stuff went down. Yeah.
But I think there's great comedy in how she views her and imagines a lot of
Joanna.
Her.
So Tom comes to the West. He doesn't go to Claire's house, interestingly, because they're not back together. He is, and so he's staying in Joanna's house to write his book because Joanna's helping him. And this is the interesting thing. I love this, like people giving people houses to actually write their books. You know, that's fascinating.
That's a great idea.
I love that, yeah. So if any listeners want to give me a house for a summer. And then Joanna is there for part of the summer, and she also visits, and she has this interesting conversation with Claire in a very interesting sequence when Claire actually starts to kind of say, okay, I'll put it up to her, because she's jealous of her, because she thinks maybe Tom and her are having a little fling, and she starts to have feelings again for Tom. And yeah, Joanna says, I don't live here in this house. Yes. You couldn't actually live here. We summered here, a verb.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to divide people from now on.
We hate
summered
her so much.
And people who have no houses. Yeah.
There's a message, Elaine, saying, don't give away all the storyline. We want to read it. They're actually giving it to me, actually. Oh. Don't worry, we haven't given nothing away. We haven't even gone into the 1920s, which is like, that's the horror. But it's extraordinary. And you feel guilty of the kind of the thrilling nature of that sort of horror in a weird way, if you know what I mean. Because I don't think we talk about the Civil War a lot, but we actually don't go into the details of Black and Tan towns very often.
Or the fact, and if we go back to the kitchen from the top of the chat, that kitchen space being this intimate space, but where really violent things can happen. And today it comes into that space in the 90s also, you know, and that whole notion that the Black and Tans and the reprisals came into people's domestic space, into the countryside.
Yes, very good.
You know, and
I made the mistake of reading that bit at night.
Sorry.
But look, it's an extraordinary, a brilliant novel.
We have to try and sell it now.
You don't
just
have to
read
sell
it during the day.
This is your third one. They've loved the previous ones. They'll go again. Let me go mad in my own way is how you don't say it. Elaine Feeney, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And sure, we'll see you for the next one.
You will.
But Let Me Go Mad in My Own Way for the meantime.